Good morning, Mr. Barta and Mr. Anderson. Are you both ready to proceed this morning? All right. Mr. Barta, we'll give you, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, so the light will come on with 5 minutes to go, and Mr. Anderson will give you a warning with 10 minutes to go in your argument.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
We raised two main issues in our brief and the trial below. Basically, that the case was not properly processed, nor was it properly charged. I believe that the processing errors are so egregious that that is where I'd like to focus my attention. Mr. Bassett was never arraigned in the circuit court. He never waived that arraignment. The Kikuchi case is as close as we get in this jurisdiction. In that case, the defendant clearly waived the right to arraignment. I understand this is a case of first impression here in Hawaii, but the mainland cases have basically adopted the position that an arraignment is fundamental and if it's not waived, it should basically require a reversal.
Don't a lot of those mainland cases require an objection?
Pardon?
Don't a lot of the mainland cases, the ones you cited, don't they require an objection?
Yes, sir, and I objected. I should say we objected down below at every opportunity we had.
But your objection was more to the effect that you thought you were in a, that, and it doesn't even sound like you're making the argument that you were making previously. You were suggesting that you weren't even in a family district court, or is that still your argument?
No, sir, it's not our argument, and I did correct myself. At the trial level, I argued in the alternative. I initially argued that it appeared as though Mr. Bassett was never arraigned in the family district court, but the court found otherwise, and then I said, in that case, the case was not properly committed to the circuit court, he was not arraigned in the circuit court, and I raised that objection several times at the trial level.
Well, in fact, in that proceeding, when the court ruled that your client was arraigned in family district court,
yes,
you did say that in that regard, there was no commitment order and there was not a second arraignment within 14 days.
I did, Your Honor.
And I think you said that twice, once on page 16 and again on page 18 of that. Hearing on, what was it, March 22nd?
Yes, sir.
And then during the trial, you repeated that throughout the trial. Didn't you renew your objections?
Every opportunity I had, Your Honor.
Was your client actually held in district court per Rule 10A?
Your Honor, my client was arrested, I believe, 2 days prior to the arraignment. 10 days prior to the arraignment, 2 days prior to the filing of the complaint, which, by the way, was filed in the wrong court. In any event, he was arrested, released, and appeared in the family district court for arraignment.
But is it okay? So you're saying he was held in the family district court?
I'm saying he was arraigned in the family district court.
Okay, but isn't really he was arraigned in the family court, not the family district court?
My understanding is that there are two divisions of the family court, the family district court and the family circuit court. And the family court itself is a division from the circuit court. So just as the Honolulu division of the district court is part of the circuit court, I would submit that the family district court...
How was the family district court created? Is there a statute or a constitutional provision that creates the family district court? I'm only aware of the family
court. There is a statute that specifically provides that the family court is a division of the
circuit court. Right. It's a division of the circuit court. And, of course, the statutes also say that there will be district family judges. But I'm just saying, in terms of the court in which your client appeared, I'm not aware of there being a family district court. I'm only aware of there being a family court.
Well, there are family district court judges.
Right.
So it doesn't seem to me reasonable that there would be a family district court judge if there was no court for that judge.
Well, you cited a statute that referred to family district court, didn't you?
Yes.
What statute was that? Do you recall? Well, I think you should have that at hand. If you don't, you can come back to it. The other thing I wanted to ask you was, you made the claim that Judge Choi could not sit in circuit court because he was a per diem judge. So he could only sit in district court or family district court. Is that correct? You referred to the judiciary website.
Actually, I think I made the opposite argument. I think I was in error. I think I argued.
Did you say because he was a per diem?
He could sit anywhere, is what my argument at the trial court was. And I think I may very well have been in error when I made that.
You corrected that, though, in your opinion.
It was corrected either by myself or the judge.
So your ultimate conclusion was, because he was a per diem judge, he could only sit in district court or family district court.
Right, that's correct.
Would it be an anomaly for one circuit court to commit the defendant to another circuit court for jury trial?
I would think so.
But is there anything that expressly precludes that result if the statute appears to envision the creation of a family court as a collective entity?
Well, it just wouldn't make any sense. I mean, it's basically you, for example, the Supreme Court referring oral argument to itself or committing the case to itself. It just doesn't.
But, I mean, for example, in the circuit court, couldn't there not be a system where, in fact, certain preliminary matters are committed to one judge and then the subsequent matters in the case go to another judge? Is there anything that would preclude that? And if not, how is this not analogous? Wouldn't this be analogous? Or couldn't, at least I think that's the state's argument. I guess I want to get your take on whether that argument works or not.
I believe the Intermediate Court of Appeals correctly held that Mr. Bastick was in the family district court. If he were in the family circuit court, it's one thing for the court to say, okay, for example, when we appear for arraignment in circuit court, the administrative judge, Judge Perkins, will say the case is now assigned to Judge so-and-so. Now, that's appropriate, but there's no requirement for a commitment order. It just seems illogical.
If I can just apologize, you're correct. You did cite to the statute 571.8 that creates the family district courts, and I apologize for that oversight.
Well, the pretrial order said that the defendant, your client, was committed to the circuit court, right?
Yes.
So would that make much sense? The pretrial order make any sense if, in fact, he was already arraigned in the circuit court?
I think not. And I think also that the family court rules, 81C, I believe, specifically says that all criminal matters involving adults that are under the jurisdiction of the family court are to be governed by the Hawaii Rules of Penal Procedure. The Hawaii Rules of Penal Procedure clearly state that non-felony cases are to be brought in the district court. And unless this court is going to hold for the first time that there is no family district court,
And that makes a lot of sense, right? You start out in the family district court because at that point you could waive a jury trial, and so you would stay in that court.
Exactly. Right? It's just like any other criminal case. And there are reasons for a commitment occurring, actually, the second appearance occurring in circuit court 14 days after the initial appearance. And that is to give the accused an opportunity to reconsider, perhaps waive jury trial, have an opportunity to consult with counsel. In this case, Mr. Bastick was represented by the Public Defender's Office. In fact, they even waived the reading of the charge.
Well, isn't there another reason? You know, we just recently decided this case, Kalia, I think, where there was a attempt to, I guess, I don't remember the facts exactly, enter a request for a jury trial. And so the case was transferred, or supposed to have been transferred to circuit court, but I guess an order of commitment wasn't filed, or and the prosecution filed an amended complaint. Do you recall that?
I apologize, I don't perfect.
Well, isn't the reason why, or one reason might be, for the requirement that someone be rearranged in circuit court, is that when the district court commits the defendant to the circuit court for a jury trial, then the district court no longer has jurisdiction over the defendant.
Certainly.
And so in order for the court to reassert jurisdiction over the defendant and start the process, then that would require the court to rearrange the defendant in circuit court.
I would agree. I also think it is what gives the court personal jurisdiction over the accused as well. The complaint gives the court subject matter jurisdiction, allows the court to confer subject matter jurisdiction. And if I can just change my focus for a moment, and although this is somewhat new, it is an issue that deals with subject matter jurisdiction, and it just occurred to me as I was preparing the oral argument. And that is that the complaint was filed in the circuit court. When the prosecutor at the trial level attempted to amend the complaint for the first time, he argued that the caption district court was an error. I would submit to you that the caption was correct. What was incorrect was the filing, that the case was supposed to have been filed in the family district court. It was not. As a consequence, the family district court never had jurisdiction to begin with. Then, since there was no commitment order, I would submit that really Mr. Bassett didn't even have to appear in circuit court, and because the district court never had any jurisdiction to begin with, the pretrial order is also ineffective. So here he is, he appears for trial, he never waives arraignment, there is no order committing the case to circuit court, he timely objects, and the court allows for an amendment of a pleading which has no legal significance. Now, if you were to...
In what sense does it have no legal significance?
Because it was there was no basis to file it in circuit court. This complaint was filed 2 days after his arrest, 10 days prior to his arraignment in district court. He had no obligation to appear in the circuit court. It was a rogue pleading. If you take the position that the amended complaint was defective in form simply because it's not an amended complaint, but it's a complaint filed for the first time in circuit court, I would submit to you that there are errors there too, because the complaint was filed after the jury was impaneled. So I would submit to the court that there was never any subject jurisdiction created in this case at the circuit court level for that reason as well. The rules say that the court may allow for an amendment to the complaint prior to the start of trial. And the court did rule prior to the impaneling of the jury, but the record indicates that the complaint itself was filed after the jury was sworn. So, again, I apologize that that's not in my opening brief. It just occurred to me as I was preparing for opening brief, but it is an issue of subject matter jurisdiction, I think.
I'm sorry, didn't the caption say in the district court of the First Circuit?
Yes, that's my point.
Which is a court that you think did not have jurisdiction over him. At this point, that would be your assertion.
My argument is it didn't have jurisdiction because it was not filed in the district court. It was filed in the wrong court. There was no complaint filed in the court in which he was ordered to appear.
Actually, under 571.14a1, the family court has exclusive original jurisdiction of abuse cases, right?
Okay.
So the district court never has jurisdiction over a family.
No, I'm sorry. What I'm saying is the caption wasn't entirely correct. It should have said family district court. Okay. But my point is it wasn't filed in the family district court. It was filed in the circuit court, in the First Circuit.
Yeah, no, you're really confusing things. That's the position of the prosecution, right? That it originally was filed in the circuit court. So then he was properly arraigned.
Well, that is their that's their position. It was filed in the circuit court, but he was in the family district court. It's improperly filed. It's my position.
So you disagree with the you disagree with the. No, I think your argument's unraveling. So you disagree with the circuit court decision judge who said this was filed in the family district court, which was the proper place to have filed it initially.
Initially, I disagreed with the family district judge. I then changed my position and asked what the family district judge represented made sense to me, and I said, okay, we still have a problem. Here's the problem.
So you agree that it needed to be filed in the family district court? Right?
Yes.
What is the file stamp on that complaint?
It says circuit court. And it says circuit court. It doesn't say family circuit court. It says circuit court. On the other hand, the amended complaint says in the family circuit court.
So they both say circuit court, but one says family circuit.
Yes.
And the other one just says circuit.
Yes.
The complaint, the original complaint, was filed in the district court of the First Circuit.
No.
That's the caption.
The caption is district court. The filing is in the circuit court.
And your position is that a document filed in the circuit court cannot be effective or deemed filed in the district court. It has to be physically taken to the district court courthouse, even though the district court is, in some sense, part of that circuit court or a division of the circuit court.
I understand that it can be transferred. There is no indication that occurred in this case. It appears as though it is simply filed in the circuit court.
Can I ask you what, other than the jurisdictional issues that you've raised or concern about whether the court properly had jurisdiction over your client, what prejudice your client suffered as a result of not being arraigned in the in front of the family circuit court?
Well, as I mentioned at the trial level, he may have waived jury. He would have had a right to confer with counsel. Mr. Bastet actually waited until the eve of trial before retaining me. Had he been required to appear in the circuit court, he would have been forced to confer with counsel well before then.
Wasn't there an attorney there representing him?
There was an attorney representing him at the district court arraignment.
Not in the family circuit court? I thought the public defender was still there.
You know, he
appeared pro se.
I don't know, but as a matter of practice, I would believe that a public defender would have appeared, but Mr. Bassett had no contact with that public defender, as far as I know.
Is that in the record?
No, it's not.
Does it need to be in the record? In other words, you've identified potential prejudice, but is there anything in the record to indicate that he actually was prejudiced or established that prejudice?
Well, I would submit that the issue really is whether or not your rules of court are mandatory or discretionary. Word shall is throughout these rules. The court shall issue a commitment order. The court shall arraign the accused. And under principles of statutory construction, it's really just a question of whether it's mandatory or not. In some rules, it's a question of whether or not it's form over substance. The rule specifically states that in matters of form, it's
That's a question of whether there should be a requirement of prejudice or not. I guess my question is slightly different, which, what is the prejudice that your client suffered, as opposed to whether we should adopt a rule that requires prejudice? What is the prejudice that he suffered in the record, according to the record?
Well, one, I don't believe the court obtained, again, personal jurisdiction over him by there being no arraignment. Two, not being advised of the charge, I think is a fundamental right. And again, the mainland cases don't speak of prejudice. They just speak of whether or not there is a waiver.
But I thought your position was arraignment is a critical stage of trial, and therefore you don't need to show prejudice.
It is. It's in our brief, it's due process, right?
So your position was you don't need to show prejudice because it is
correct.
Critical.
I think cases like Elliott and others speak to actual knowledge of the charge. It's not necessary.
If you raise your objection before trial.
Again, I'm just trying, I understand that you could have a discussion about whether there should be a requirement of prejudice and whether Elliott would apply here. I just want to be sure that I understand completely what the implications of this were for your clients. So no personal jurisdiction, not being advised of the charge, anything else that the record would disclose resulted in prejudice to him as a matter because of not being arraigned the second time. Is there anything to indicate that, you know, he actually wanted to plead guilty, not go to trial, anything like that? Had I known, I was just waiting to tell the judge I wanted to plead guilty, but
you know. That's kind of an impossible scenario to have in the record.
Did this defendant testify? Did your client testify?
No, he did not testify. I would also, if there are no further questions on this line, I'd like to.
Actually, with respect to the issue of it, have the complaint having been filed in circuit court, doesn't Rule 2.1 of the rules of the circuit court provide that the clerks of the circuit courts are ex officio clerks of all courts of record? And therefore, you know, putting aside the issue that it said district court and not district family district court, it appears that this rule would take care of that.
I agree, right? And the court might therefore find that the filing in the circuit court did give the district court jurisdiction. But that was, and we're still in a family district court, but that would not cure the defect that occurred with respect to the circuit court.
So are you now conceding the issue that the complaint said district court instead of family district court?
You mean filed?
Filed, yeah. The complaint said the district court, right? Not family district court, right?
My position is it was filed in the circuit court. I understand what you just read from the rule, and the court's inclined to find that that is sufficient to give the family district court jurisdiction, and I understand the position. But again, it doesn't cure the defect that occurred at the circuit court, which is the filing of the amended complaint after the impaneling of the jury.
Our case just presents the issue of whether or not there was an arraignment, correct? So our case only concerns the circumstance where there was no arraignment.
Okay.
If the question is whether or not arraignment was done within 14 days and was not brought within 14 days, then how should the court approach that?
Well, I think that there is a fundamental right to have an arraignment. It's a fundamental right to be accused, due process right, to be advised of the charge against him in the court that he is now currently appearing before.
What about the 14 days?
The 14 days, again, gives the accused an opportunity to then for that charge. In other words, as opposed to having the arraignment paneling with the jury, the 14-day period allows for time to be advised of the charge and then to file whatever necessary motions are deemed appropriate, to consult with counsel, to prepare for trial.
So under your position, it actually, this argument about whether or not there was a second arraignment almost becomes moot, because no matter what would have happened, it wouldn't have been done within 14 days. So from your position, it actually didn't matter. I mean, it would have been faulty anyhow, isn't that? Because it didn't.
What I'm saying is there was error, regardless of whether it was 14 days or, yes, 14 days or on the eve of trial. The rules were not abided by, and they should have been. It's not discretionary. It's mandatory.
And so.
And presumably, the court has a reason for doing so. And if, in this case, a court does not have to follow the rules, then why would it have to in any other case? I mean, there's a reason for the court creating an orderly procedure for the processing of cases.
Mr. Barton, generally when there's a request for a jury trial, the case is committed to circuit court, and then the administrative judge usually holds a mass arraignment. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did they not hold an arraignment in this case only, or just as a general rule on 709-900 cases they don't?
I can't speak to that.
Okay.
But Mr. Barta, the 14-day issue assumes that there was an arraignment, but it didn't take place within 14 days.
Yes.
So, in your case, it's not that issue, because there was never any arraignment.
That's correct.
So, if that were the case, that arraignment took place after 14 days, what should the court do? What should the court do if the arraignment took place after 14 days?
Well, then, I'm not sure I understand what should the court do. What are you asking me?
Well, what would the remedy be, if any, or would there be no remedy if arraignment did not take place within the 14 days?
In other words, had my client been arraigned right before trial?
No, the question is, if, in light of the fact that the arraignment didn't occur in 14 days, what should the court have done?
In other words, when the objection was made, the court should have said, okay, Mr. Prosecutor, arraign the defendant.
But if that's over the 14, in other words, your position would be, had the arraignment taken place, that would have been an adequate step by the court in this particular case.
I wouldn't say it's adequate. I would simply say that would have been, that would have lessened any prejudice to the defendant. I would say that it would then be dependent upon this court to determine whether or not court's failure to follow its rules was excusable or not.
So, meaning the 14 days?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're saying shall under Rule 10A is not mandatory?
I'm saying it is mandatory. I'm saying it's mandatory under Rule 5B1, 5B3, 7H, 10, and 7F. All of those rules don't talk about the discretion. They don't say if the district court feels like it is going to
then why is the 14 days waivable then?
I'm not saying that it is. I'm saying that the proper thing still to do would have been to arraign the defendant.
Not dismiss the case without prejudice at that point for failure to arraign within 14 days.
I don't. My position is it would not have cured the defect.
Okay.
But still, had the court done that, it would have put the state in a better position.
Thank you, Mr. Barta.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
May it please the court. James Anderson for the state. I think the record is confusing below. I think I was confused below. I think what happened actually is Bassnett was arraigned in the district court before Judge Choi. I was a probation officer under Judge Choi. I think he only does family court stuff. I'm pretty sure. And I think I'm not sure whether the deputy tried to amend it to show district family court or circuit family court. I'm not really sure, but be as it is, he waived reading of the charge, pled not guilty, and a pretrial order, you know, after he demanded jury trial, sent the case to circuit court. He went there. I guess it was sufficient to get him there because he appeared there. But he appeared there 3 months late.
Is that normal?
I don't know. I think this is aberrant.
It's actually, this is the norm, is it not? This is the process that's followed in family.
I didn't know that. I mean, I don't know that. And that's why it's so confusing to me. And definitely the rule, 10A, was not met. And it says shall. And so, no. But in answer to your question, Chief Justice, you do have a test how to deal with this situation. Kikuchi, the defendant at a trial de novo, was not arraigned, and neither was the record show that he entered a plea. And the court said, is a conviction a nullity for failure of formal arraignment and lack of entry of a not guilty plea, considering that both Rule 10 and Rule 11 say shall enter the plea, shall arraign within 14 days after being arraigned in the district court. The court said criminal proceedings should not be affected by defects in matters of form where a defendant is not prejudiced. And that's my point here. He had counsel. Of course he objected.
Mr. Anderson,
yes.
You've been here often enough.
We've
been here often enough. And that's not really all that the court held, right? The court went through the process of saying that he had sufficient notice, et cetera, because he went through the trial. But it also said, and raised no objection during the course of trial. Therefore, yes,
wait. I was just getting to that. And I'm trying to explain that.
Well, from what you said, it didn't seem qualified. But I just wanted to make that clear.
Sure.
Because you said Kikuchi controls.
No, I said Kikuchi's an interesting case. I didn't cite it, but since I was wrong in my statement of the case in my argument, you know, I'm seeing
so
some.
So Kikuchi, you agree, says that one of the factors is that there was no objection.
Exactly.
Which distinguishes Kikuchi from this case, where there are a lot of objections.
Absolutely. But I think it was an objection in form and not in substance, because he had his counsel. He knew fully the nature and the cause of the accusation. He defended against it at trial. And, you know, when he was initially arraigned, he waived reading of the charge, and he pled not guilty. So, you know, I think, yes, that little anomaly there, yeah, takes it outside of
the... That really is irrelevant, right? Because the rules already say you are arraigned in district court, but if you... And so... If you waive jury trial, you stay in district court. But if you ask for a jury trial, you have to be committed to circuit court. Circuit court, therefore, has to reassert its jurisdiction. And the rule provides that you are arraigned in circuit court.
I'm not sure if it's the jurisdiction. I don't know if I can answer that.
Okay.
Agree with
well,
that.
Forget the jurisdiction okay. part. But the rules say that you have to be arraigned in circuit court.
Absolutely.
Because, Mr. Anderson, if we take your argument to its logical conclusion, as long as somebody was arraigned the first time in district court, which they always are, or they waive it, the rearrangement rule is nullified.
Well, not nullified. I think you have to show prejudice, you know? And I think you have to...
Does the rule say shall do it except unless prejudice is...
No, it doesn't. Of course not. No, I agree with you. The case does, though. So,
don't you think there must be a purpose that the rule requires it?
I think it's a formality. They call it a formal arraignment. So I think it is a formality that you be reapprised of the charge against you. Yes, I think there's a purpose for that. But I don't think it's a jurisdictional matter. I think it's a matter of form. And I think it's a fair thing to do. I'm not saying, you know that you should just, every time that doesn't occur, that there should be no consequence. I'm just saying that in this case, there should not be a dismissal charge because I don't think you can get to show prejudice at all. That's my sole point.
Well, we have lots of situations where, for example, if it's an invalid jury trial waiver, that we don't look for prejudice.
Yeah, those are a little more serious, I think, where it's just, you know, per se prejudicial. I don't think this is that way. I mean, not that I, from what I've read, the case law at least. So.
What about the time frame?
Time frame, 3 months is pretty wild. You know, that's a long time. It's certainly outside 14 days. I was surprised that the circuit court didn't just arraign anyway, rearraign, considering the rule, but she didn't. I mean, the court didn't, so.
Do you know if that time frame is typical?
No, I don't. I have no idea. I would think it wouldn't be, you know? I would think this is kind of an aberrant case. I would hope so.
In district court, it's complied with, isn't it? Not family district, but our district court to go up to circuit court. Isn't that time frame complied with as a general practice?
Yes, I know that. Family court is a different kind of animal in a way. So.
But actually, the family court has not been following this practice, has it, in terms of the rule 5 to the rule 10?
If this is an indication of such, I would agree with you. I would hope not, though.
Isn't it in the government's interest? I think what struck me the most is, especially in these kind of cases, having it done within 14 days advantages the government.
You mean to get the court case to
get the case moving before, you know, you have retractions and.
Yeah, this is definitely one that fell through the cracks, I think.
Well, you don't know whether it was an operation of the failure of the prosecutor to do something or it was in court.
It could be both. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. It's just unfortunate. But bottom line, I don't think it should be dismissed. I don't think the conviction's a nullity for lack of that formal arraignment.
Let me ask a follow-up on Justice Nakayama was asking. Once there's a commitment, do you wait for the court to make the next step, or can the prosecution go in and file that complaint and make sure it's done within 14 days, the complaint in the circuit court? I mean, who's in control of that time?
I think it could go either way. But, you know, if we want to advance, we'll go, and if it goes in the normal course, I think the court won't.
I mean, if you file it, can you immediately get an arraignment date, or do you have to wait until the family court sets it? I guess I don't know the procedure. That's
actually Rule 5, is it B7? C7? No. D7? Well, toward the end of Rule 5, it does say, within 7 days after the district court's oral order of commitment, the district court shall sign its written order.
It does, indeed. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
The clerk shall enter.
Moving the case forward. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. In the old days, there used to actually be a problem with getting the case together and walking in front of a certain court, as I recall. But that shouldn't be an impediment nowadays.
No,
right?
It shouldn't. No, not at all.
Do you know how many days the circuit court will? Oh, actually, this wouldn't be committed to circuit, so Judge Perkins wouldn't be arraigning it. It would still stay in
family court.
Family court.
Go next door from 8D to 8C, I think. I know that. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't. The only other issue would be the sufficiency of the complaint. I would think that, you know, the point is that whether the accused is provided with fair notice. I think when he looks at family or household member, he understands his spouse is that. Now, there are other permutations in that definition. Thank goodness I'm not there, you know, because there are some things that are not easily understandable in family and household member. But I'll give you that. But in this case, the accused understood that. And he understood what physical pain is. By hurting a person's body. And I think headbutting the woman twice and hitting her in the face twice, that's pretty clear.
Mr. Anderson, you know, Rule 54 of the Rules of Penal Procedure specifically excludes 571.11 cases, which are the juvenile proceedings, but does not exclude 571.14, which is the adult family court proceedings, from the requirements of the Hawaii Rules of Penal Procedure. So it does appear that Rule 5 and Rule 10 do apply. defamatory proceedings.
Yes, 10 a.m. Yes.
So are you suggesting that if the district, you know, if it was a non-family case and the requirements of Rule 5 and 10 were not followed, and there was an objection, that would still, the defendant would still have to show prejudice?
Yeah, I think I would. I, according to Kikuchi, which was a non-family court case, it was a traffic offense, I believe, started in district court and then at that
even
time,
if there was objections all up the line, the defendant would still have to show prejudice.
I think, I don't know, if there is an objection immediately, there didn't need to be at the district court level because he was arraigned here. But I think the second arraignment, the 10A mandatory arraignment, I'll give you, I think you have to show prejudice.
Can you conceive of a situation that would show prejudice? It sounds like to me you're swallowing up the rule because it sounds like since there's always going to be an arraignment, there's always going to be a filed document, although this one's really unusual if the document didn't get filed until after the jury trial started. It sounds as if it's going to be no harm, no foul.
I think it is in this case if the complaint remains the same. You know, there's no change. I think that would be prejudicial.
But isn't an arraignment a critical stage of the process? Hasn't even the United States Supreme Court says, hey, this is, you have the right to counsel. This is not some, you know, pro forma situation. Arraignment is a critical part of the process.
I think it is. I think, and you know what? I guess my only answer to that is he was initially arraigned. It wasn't like he was dispensed with entirely. It's just that second phase wasn't adhered to. But if you folks think that that's necessary, then...
He was arraigned in a court that couldn't try him.
The district court didn't have jurisdiction, right?
No, absolutely. Just for arraignment purposes, right. And then when he demanded jury trial, yeah, it went.
Actually, Judge Choi, as a per diem district judge, could have, a per diem family district judge, also was cross-assigned to district court, right?
Right.
So that judge had jurisdiction until the defendant demanded a jury trial, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then is it your argument that at that point, that in that court, he was arraigned, so there was at some point in this proceedings where a court did have jurisdiction over him, he was called upon to plead and did so in light of that, there's no prejudice? Is that the argument you're making?
No, not entirely. I, that's partially it, yes. The other prejudice, lack of prejudice, would be for the lack of arraignment in circuit court.
If this complaint had said in the family court, family district court of the Second Circuit, would the family district court of the First Circuit have had jurisdiction?
Well, I think that could have been changed because those kind of errors can be corrected without problem. And I think the statute says that. I think even 7D says that, right? I'm pretty sure. Yeah, those defects of form are wouldn't be justification to dump the case. Yeah. You know, I have nothing else, folks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Barta, any rebuttal?
It sounds to me as though the court's not interested in the issue dealing with whether or not the charge itself was sufficiently stated. That being the case, though.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barta. Mr. Anderson, the court will take this matter under advisement.